I was on vacation with my family, and we were going from Grand Rapids, Michigan, where I'm from, to Seattle, Washington, where my wife is from, and we were in the middle of, I don't know, Montana, Wyoming, or somewhere, and we were pulling a camper behind, and the camper is like a little wagon with a tent on top of it, and we stopped at a place in the middle of nowhere. And yeah, I had four boys at the time and my wife, and we all went to sleep, but I got up early. You know, I woke up and I got out and I made some coffee, and I'm sitting there in a chair just enjoying, you know, the sun is starting to come up and the birds are chirping, and I'm alone, and you know, I don't have the kids whining and wanting something or whatever. It was just a relaxing moment, and I was enjoying this time to myself. But then I wandered with my eyes to the right, and there was a guy camping right next to us, and he was fiddling with his truck, and he was taking some part out of the engine or something. And when I looked over at him, he happened to be looking over at me, and our eyes met, and I knew he was going to say something. So he said, "Well, it looks like you made it through the night." And I wanted to say yes, and, you know, please let me alone. I want to enjoy this moment alone I have for myself. But what I said was, "Yeah, it does." You know, I wasn't enthusiastic at all. And he said, "Yeah, I'm taking my alternator out. There seems to be a problem with the bearing." I remember thinking, I don't know anything about alternators. I don't know that they had a bearing. But I responded politely, "Yeah, that doesn't sound very good." And he took my response as an opportunity to, he thought I was being enthusiastic, I don't know. But he kept talking. "Yeah, I'm coming up from South Dakota, and I'm going to Montana. That's where my wife and I have lived for the last 40 years. And I said, yeah, you know, we're going off to Seattle. You know, I wanted the conversation to end so I could go back to my coffee. But then he said something. He said something that sort of snapped me out of my indifference, snapped me out of my selfish, wanting to just be alone. And he said something that, you know, that reached into my heart and squeezed it hard. Because he said, "You know, I'm on my way to the home that my wife and I lived for 45 years. And then he said this. And he said it as a matter of fact. He didn't say it with a lot of emotion. But he said, "Of course, I don't have a wife anymore. She died last year." And I remember thinking about him and thinking about 45 years together in Montana, doing things, having kids, camping, driving, doing life. And now he doesn't have that. And he said it so matter-of-factly, and I don't know what it was, but it grabbed hold of me. Because we weren't meant to be alone. God created the world in 6 days, and after each day he looked back at what he created and he said, "It is good." And on the sixth day he created man and he said, "It is very good." But in Genesis chapter 2, he sees that the man is all alone. And even though this is paradise, God said, "It is not good." And that's when he created the woman. And it says at the end of Genesis chapter 2 that the two became one. Reflecting the three in one. The two in one reflects the three in one. God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We were not meant to be alone. The marriage relationship, we reflect who God is and who God made us to be. Male and female, he created them. That's connection two. Connection two is marriage. Connection one, most important, is our relationship to God. Next most important connection, if you're married, is with your spouse. Basic communication path for your marriage. If you want God at the center of your marriage, then you have to do things. You have to be on some path that helps you to connect to each other and to God. Talking, listening, repeatedly. You can't have a relationship with someone without talking, listening repeatedly. And if you want God at the center of your marriage, you have to have prayer. You have to have Bible. You have to have devotions. You have to put these things together. Now, how are you going to do that? Well, what do you need to succeed? You need a path. What are you going to do together? What are you going to study? What are you going to read? Schedule. How's this going to work? You go to work early. She goes to work later on. You're off with your friends. Your hobbies. She's off with her friends' hobbies. Doing different things. How are we going to get on the same... How's this going to happen? How are we going to have a connection with one another? What a lot of marriages do is they ignore each other for a year and then they go for a week vacation together to sort of make up for it. Accountability. Who's going to hold you accountable for this? Reward. What's your reward for sticking this out? How are you going to get supported? Who's helping you? Why most don't succeed at this? The first reason why marriage devotions is so difficult is because opposites attract. So you're attracted to the person you're attracted to. One likes to get up early and study the Bible. The other one likes to do it at night. One likes to go deep. The other likes to go shallow. One likes to talk about every angle and argue about things. The other likes things just to go well. You marry your opposite. And so how's this going to go together? You're too busy. I mentioned that already. You're both doing your own things. Mixed up priorities. You got the kids. You got work. You got all these things in your life. And what happens, a husband and wife, they have kids, and all of a sudden the kids become the priority. But the number one thing you can do for your kids is have a great marriage. Nothing will affect your kids more than your marriage. Life is too good, so you don't think about it. Devotions, not meaningful. Lack of support. You don't have family behind you. You don't have a church behind you. Lack of a mission. You know, if you were helping another couple get connected to God, it would help you get connected to God. But if you're not helping another marriage, then, you know, you can be lazy about your own connection to God. Married couples need common ground in order to have them work. So here's a few questions for you to consider. And if you are married, I would suggest that you write these things down and you actually discuss the answers to these questions together. What do you already have that bring you and your spouse together? What common interests do you have? My wife and I both love music, so we do music together. What hobbies do you have? What interests do you, what sports, something, what do you enjoy doing together? What kind of activities do you already enjoy doing together? What new kinds of activities or interests could you pursue together? Now, you might look at what your spouse is doing, and is there anything in there that you could join your spouse in? My wife loves bird watching. So sometimes she'll ask, do you want to go bird watching? And I'm like, well, I'd rather play this sport. So sometimes I should say, yes, let's go bird watching. And you know what? I may actually enjoy it. Understanding your differences. Okay, one of the reasons why husband and wife have a hard time connecting together is this issue that we're attracted to our opposites, and sometimes that gets in the way. We have differences, and how do we understand that? First of all, your past, looking at your past. Here's some questions to consider. What was your parents' marriage like? Were they fun? Did they have an intimate marriage? Did they demonstrate that? Was it strained? Was it loving? Was there a lot of yelling? Was it broken? Was it spiritual? What kind of parental example did you grow up with, each of you? What was your spouse's parents' marriage like? So you look at what yours was like, you look at what your spouse's were like, and they're probably different. Or some of the things will be the same, but some things will be different. What would you like to keep from both? What would you like to avoid from both? Can you see how these would be good questions to sit down and talk about? What do I want to keep from the example I had? What do we want to keep from the example that you had? What do we want to avoid? Because all your past is playing into your present. Okay, understanding the differences, your present situation. Okay, I have this as a worksheet for you to do, but I just want to show it to you. I would like each of you to go through this, and you rate yourself, and you rate your spouse. And then you put the difference. You subtract the high number from the low number, and that's the difference. So after work, I'm ready to go out. You might feel strongly about this. You might put a 5. Yeah, I want to go out. I want to do stuff. And your spouse is like, oh, you know, I just want to sit home and be quiet, you know, and read a book. So she puts a 1. 5 minus 1 is 4. So it's a big difference. And then you add up all the numbers and you'll see how close or how apart you are in terms of your personality and your reactions to life, just to see in what areas you're the same and what areas you're different in order that you become aware of them, how different you might be. Understanding your differences, the future. So you look at your past, you look at your present, but now you look at your future. How is it possible to work out and even come to enjoy your differences? Okay, so as we're going forward, yeah, we may have all these differences. You've identified this. You've taken this little test. You've seen that you're different here. How might you enjoy each other's differences? Why does that always have to be a negative? How can these differences actually add to your marriage? You know, if you and your spouse are exactly the same person, then one of you isn't needed. It's because you are different that, you know, new possibilities. So, you know, when you meet someone and you have this shared common thing, but they're different, and that's attractive to you because it adds something to your life. Maybe they challenge you in a way that others haven't. When do differences lead to conflict? Number one, when one partner feels ignored. Okay, you ignore each other, then the differences are going to lead to conflict. Number two, when one partner feels taken for granted. Okay, I do these things for you, but no one seems to appreciate these things. Well, then the differences lead to conflict. Or number three, when one partner feels taken advantage of. I'm doing all of this, and I'm doing a lot of the work, and I don't see what you're doing, and now I feel taken advantage of, and now when something happens or you do something, I get angry very easily. It leads to conflict because I feel like things are not fair. Typical conflict management styles. Try to figure out which one or two of these things are you. And then the spouse does the same thing and sort of see how you're missing each other with your different management styles. First is the Eskimo style. The Eskimo style is to be bundled up. You know, it's cold and you want to isolate yourself. And so the Eskimo style is sort of a, you know, I don't want to deal with these things. I want to just turn my head away. So maybe that's your style. There is no conflict because you don't want to deal with it. You just sweep things under the rug. You don't talk about these things. There's the cowboy style. The cowboy style is you take out your gun and you start shooting. If there's something you don't like, you right away get angry and right away say something negative to the other person. There's the courtroom style. That's really my style. A courtroom style is like a lawyer. Why did you do that? What were you thinking when you did that? And then the other person gives a reason, and then you go, well, really? Is that the reason? Or is this the reason? So like a lawyer, you're trying to pin them down. And it's one question after another. I'm not going to let you go until you confess. And usually one of the marriage partners is really good at that, really good with words and parsing and coming up with arguments. And the other person needs to think, and they're not as quick. And so they end up losing all the time, and so they don't want to play. So the courtroom person is saying all this stuff, and the other person goes into Eskimo style. No, I'm not even going to talk about this. Then there's the dictator style. We're not going to argue about this. I'm just going to tell you this is the way it is. So I'm always dictating, always saying this is how it's going to go. I'm going to rule. There's never a discussion. There's the fugitive style, which is runaway. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to talk about it. We're not going to do this. So which one of these styles, or a couple of different styles, do you do? And what does your spouse do? And then can you see how you're missing each other? Or one is leading to the other. Maybe one is a fugitive, but the fugitive is only a fugitive because the other is a dictator, or they're always shooting their cowboy gun all the time and they're just trying to not get shot. And maybe if you weren't like that, they would actually discuss things. Usually it's the two working together to create the conflict and the disharmony. How to resolve conflict. I learned this long time ago, and it really, really works if you have the patience and the courage to try it out. How to resolve conflict? The Jesus way. Okay. Partner A has a problem with partner B. So partner A, you know, let's say it's myself, and I come to my wife and I say, I have this problem related to you. I have this problem that you're always late. You know, we're going to go somewhere and you're never ready on time. Okay, so I have a problem with you. So I raise this problem. Now, generally what happens is I raise a problem. Now you feel like you just got hit. And so you defend yourself. What are you talking about? I'm not the one that's late. You're the one that's late. Or, you know, there's extenuating circumstances. It's not my fault. So we get real defensive. And now we have an argument going back and forth. Well, what I'm suggesting is when someone says, I have a problem, and I lay it out before you, partner B responds to the problem. Counsel in the heart of a man is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. In other words, when someone comes and says, I have a problem with you, or here's something I don't like, instead of getting defensive and arguing back and forth, attack it from, I want to understand what your real problem is. You may legitimately have a problem with me, and I really want to understand it. And maybe it's not a problem. Maybe it's just something I need to understand about you, or there's something you need to understand about me. So how do you do that? Five questions. What is the problem? Could you tell me more about it? So you're saying that I'm late all the time? Can you tell me more about it? Can you give me a few examples? Oh, yes, I can. Well, the other day we did this. Can you tell me more about that? I want to know what the real problem is. Next question. Why is this a problem? Why is it that when I am late, do you not like that? Now, this is hard to do because you're asking someone to pour more stuff on you. You don't like what they said in the first place, and now you're asking for more? Please tell me why this is a problem for you. Well, I'll tell you why it's a problem for me. Next question. How does it make you feel? Can you explain why you feel this way? When I cause you to be late, how do you feel about that? Is this a big thing? Do you feel really angry? You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being really angry, what scale are we on here? I have no idea. Well, it's a 10. I mean, it really upsets me. Why does it upset you? What is it about being late that really upsets you? I don't know. You know, my dad was always late, and we came, and it was embarrassing. So you feel embarrassed? Yes, I feel embarrassed. What else do you feel? Can you think of a specific example, and then let's look at that and talk about how you felt in that specific incident? So you're really asking, I want to really understand what this is. I want to understand what it is. I want to be clear about what it is. And I want to understand how you feel about it and how it hurts you and why it hurts you. And then finally, here's what I understand from your point of view. This is what I understand you are saying. So I say, it sounds to me like it really hurts you when I'm late, and it hurts you because you're embarrassed, and because it reminds you of what you went through as a child, and it feels like I disrespect you because if I, you know, was thinking of your feelings, I would be on time. And, you know, is that true? Do you think I'm understanding how you're feeling and what this is? And they say, no, I don't think so. Well, then I have to listen more. I have to ask more questions. I have to listen so many times so that finally you go, yes, I think you finally understand. And then finally you ask, well, what do you need from me? What would you like from me? I would like you to be on time. What does that mean? What does on time mean? 1 minute before? 10 seconds before we go? And then they communicate. And finally, you understand what they really want. Why they feel the way they feel. All of that. Okay. So as you're doing this, it doesn't mean that you agree with them. And it doesn't mean that when they explain things and they came up with examples that you even agree with that. Maybe they're making up examples. Maybe they're putting you in a really bad light and you disagree. That's not what happened at all. But you hold on to all your feelings and thoughts until your turn. Right now you're just listening to them. You want them to understand that you are just trying to understand what they are feeling and thinking, and that's it. You're not coming up with your arguments and your strategy against them, but you're just listening to them. All right. How to resolve conflict the Jesus way, part two. See, now it's partner B's turn, the person who's been doing all this listening, to tell their side. And so how you do that is, okay, I think I've listened. I think I understand. You know, I've said this. I think you think I understand. Can I now tell you my side of this story? See, I've been holding that back. Now, they have to be willing to say, well, I guess so. Because you listen to me. Now it's their turn to listen to you. Proverbs 18:17. The first to present his case seems right, till another comes forward and questions him. So everyone thinks they're right. When they present their case and someone listens, it feels like I'm right. But now we have to listen to the other side. Five questions. It's A's turn to listen and not defend and not attack and not solve the problem. So the five questions again. Okay, here's my reaction to the whole thing. You know, you think I'm late, but here's what's going in my world. I have all the kids to get going. I have to fix everything. I have to dress them. And all you do is jump into the car and ready to go. I feel like you're not helping me, and that's why we're late. Now, the person that person now has to listen. They can't say, what are you talking about? A week ago I helped get the kids ready. No. See, now you have to listen. Just like they listened to you. So, what is this problem of the kids and the getting them ready and dressed? I want to know more about that. Why is this a problem for you? How does it make you feel? Well, it makes me feel alone. It makes me feel like, I'm a parent, but I have to do all this hard stuff. And I'm the one dealing with all the squabbles and trying to make it happen. And you're not. And you're just sitting in the car waiting for us and blaming me for all of this chaos. Well, how angry are you? How do you feel about that? Is it a 10? Is it a 1? See, you have to now do the same exact thing. Now, what happens is people start arguing back and forth at this point. See, you have to stick with it. My job is to listen to you long enough for me to understand you. Now, it's your job to listen to me long enough for you to understand me. Right or wrong? See, right or wrong has nothing to do with it at this point. We're just trying to listen to each other. Finally, what do you need from me? Well, I would like you to help with the kids. I would like you to help, at least take two of them, and I'll take two of them. Okay. So now we've listened to each other at least a little bit. We understand a little bit more on how the other is feeling about this and their view of it, right or wrong. Now we have the possibility of maybe resolving this. How to resolve conflict, the Jesus way, part three. Partner A and B try to figure out what is best for both. We've listened to each other. We understand a little bit more of each of our dilemma. Now, how can we solve this together? We're in a better position to do that than we were before. Typically what happens, I complain about something, you defend. And you complain back to me, and I defend, and we just go back and forth, and we do the same argument week after week, year after year. If you listen to married couples, they tend to argue about the same things over and over and over again, and they never learn anything. Instead, see every argument, every problem, as an opportunity to really get to know each other better. The reason why there's conflict is because we don't understand each other. That's really the bottom line. So why not take these opportunities to actually discover who we are? And it's discovering our differences and growing and using our differences for something greater. That's the genius of God putting two people that are opposite together.